You ready?
Sure.
All right, got to answer this. Hey, hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Ooh. That wasn't a very good one. Okay.
We recording?
I think we are recording. The soundboard shows everything. I've got you on Skype. I've got me. I just have a terrible echo, but maybe on your side it sounds fine.
Sounds fine to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to assume it's that way. What I might do is after a few minutes, stop it, check it, come back and paste it in at the start. But let's just go while we're here.
Okay.
So, this is the new Gappage.
It's always the new Gappage.
It's always the new Gappage. First episode, I think this is great to get the year off with a flying start like this, you know. January 1st, 2018.
Yeah, I don't know. What's your New Year's resolution, Ken?
Well, that's pretty boring. I guess we should have done a little bit of a talk.
Well, it is pretty boring because I don't really have one.
Well, no, and that's what everybody expects you to talk about. So that's why we don't do that on Gappage Show. Right? Everybody's going to talk about New Year's resolution. It's too easy, you know?
Okay.
What I'm trying to say, and I should have given you advance warning, I've just spent 59 Yankee dollars so that we could actually record a Skype podcast together because we don't seem able to meet in person. So I expect you to give me your best game. And here you are. Oh, what's your New Year's resolution? That's kind of a shitty start.
Sorry, I gotta get into it. It's still early for podcasting for me.
I understand that, and I'll edit out if I have to. But
okay, I'll get my A game. It's around here somewhere.
Yeah, I'd like you that. Listen, I've done a little research. Our first episode was recorded December 10th, 2008. First episode of Gappage. So it's a 10-year run.
Isn't it a 10-year run next year?
Well, you know, we're almost 10 years, okay? We're into our 10th year, are we not?
I guess we are into our 10th year and 40 episodes in
40 episodes.
10 years.
This is number 41. We average about 6 a year.
Yeah.
That's not bad. And let's see. Maybe something I should get out of the way. You're not under any contractual obligations with the show hole that you can't be on other shows or you can't give your best on other shows. You have to save that for the show hole.
No. I give my best on all my podcasts I'm on. Don't you listen to the RPG podcast I do?
No.
I give my best there.
Well, why don't you give a little plug for that? Because I don't even know what it's about. And I was going to do this at the end of the show. May as well do it now. Who the hell is Brent Morris and the Closet Geek? What podcast does this guy do?
Oh, well, I used to do the Closet Geek show and don't really anymore. And I'm on the show hole. Terrible Warriors, which is a podcast where we play like pen and paper role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons. I'm on a show where we play a Star Trek themed game. Okay. And I pretend to Star Trek for a few hours every month and then they cut it into episodes. It's actually a very popular show. They have like an engaged audience and people talking in a chat room and they have a Patreon. They're a real podcast.
Not the kind of people I'd ever want to meet, I'm assuming.
No, I think a couple of them you'd want to meet. It was started by Mike Dodd and This Week in Geek. So it's from that crew of people. You know, the podcasting community just sort of has all these arms that spread out everywhere. And, you know, you don't have to like exactly how everyone does their show, but it's good to be friends with them all.
And you seem to like to join in on others. So what's this RPG? Is that the one you're just talking about?
Yeah. We play, we get like a group of four or five people together. And Justin Eacock is the host. And he sort of leads the game.
Is that his real name?
Yeah.
E for Enormous?
I'll ask him.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm... I, I, have a different sense of humor with those sorts of people. I haven't busted that joke yet. I guess I'm not good enough friends with Justin to ask about that.
Okay. Well, anyway, one of the things I wanted to do on this show was to make it, to try and be serious, because too often I get sidetracked, especially if we're high, and try to make it funny, and then it's really not worth listening to. There's so many pseudo-funny shows out there. I've got actual real meat I'd like to go over today. So when you're ready, and we're still warming up now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like being serious on this show. That's
good.
That's why we do it.
Well, I'm gonna give you a question. The way Anthony Markle starts off his show with a question.
Okay.
Your podcast self or your real life self? Which one do you like the best?
I've tried to make those selves be pretty much the same person.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, like I've made a concerted effort that the person I portray on podcasts is the person that is in real life. So I'd probably more fun on podcasts like The Show Hole or whatever,
mm-hmm.
where we are intentionally goofy. But I think those two selves are the same person. Now you have a completely different situation.
Yeah, maybe that's why I asked. And maybe the question should be asked in a different way. Like, who would people like better if they knew the real Brent Morris like I do? Or the guy, the charming rogue they hear on The Show Hole and these other ones?
You're implying I'm not a charming rogue in person, Ken. I would say maybe my podcast self then, if you're gonna ask it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I'm a little. No, there's no one in front of me when I'm talking on a podcast other than you, and I don't care what I say to you.
Apparently not.
I just pretend. I pretend that everyone else isn't there, and I just sort of speak my mind. Is what mm-hmm. I try and do, especially mm-hmm. on this show.
So you're
you have to try hard to resist the urge to suppress opinions on this show.
Oh, really?
I find. Yeah.
You have to try hard to suppress the urge to express opinions.
Or no, the other way around. Like I will be talking about something and I'll think something and I'll have to force myself to say it out loud, because normally in life people tend to keep their opinions to themselves, and we often talk about politics, and
yeah,
that's something that you try and not share opinions on.
Speaking of politics and religion, of course, it's you would have enjoyed our last service at West Hill United. Greta used the term spiritual masturbation and spent quite a bit of time talking about that.
Interesting. Yeah. Was that the Christmas one?
It was a New Year's Eve one.
Oh, did they have a Christmas service? I was talking about that on the
yes,
previous podcast.
Yes, I know. We have the Darkest Night service. It was sort of the Thursday night, whenever the shortest night is. And the church is all in darkness, and everybody gets a candle, and one by one comes up and lights a candle, and she talks about, you know, the bringing back of the light. It's kind of hocus-pocus, but it's actually really incredibly beautiful. It's something you would have enjoyed, I think.
Yeah, I gotta get back out to our strange church.
I won't explain spiritual masturbation. I'm saving that for the next Dicks and Janes, but just thought I'd stick that out there.
Okay.
So let's see what else. We're only missing two podcasts, number 10 and number 17. Don't know what happened to them, but doesn't really matter. I direct people. Do you know how to direct people to find our podcasts if people wanted to?
Well, we're listed on iTunes and I think Google Play, Gaffage Conversations with Brent and Ken.
Okay.
Would be what to search, or you can search Gaffage. I guess that might work. And we're at gaffages.blogspot.ca.
That's the one. Yeah.
That's the one.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
We gotta update that site. It's looking.
Whoa, I just did that last night. I put up our new one.
I know, but it's hard to figure out where the download link is and the...
Well, there is no download
feed burner link isn't
Okay.
Clickable, and there's little things.
So maybe that's the kind of stuff, you being a geek, you could take care of, since this is your line of business. Okay, we'll get to it.
I can do that. Yeah, all right.
All right, so listen, what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop this now, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm just going to check the sounds are fine, and then we'll be right back. So this will be a station ID or something, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to hang up. I just have to stop recording. Okay, we're back. Oh, sorry, I missed your station ID. Do you want to do that again?
You're listening to the new Gappage Podcast, Conversations with Ken and Brent.
Ooh, it is very neat because you're just in my right channel, but that's okay. So listen, here's the topic I was so keen to get on. I, at the university, or college, sorry, where I teach, big difference, I'm really disturbed about political correctness, and you get all these signs of it everywhere, in terms of who they hire and the courses they teach and the things you're supposed to do and say. And I think a lot of it is about appearance, and they pretend it's about equality and equity and fairness. And I think they don't even realize fully what they're doing, the administrators. It's just a show. But anyway, we can talk about that. I think the same thing's happening at universities. You've got to be screened as to what posters you can put up and get permission and so on. Free speech is over, in other words. But they had these handouts that are very cool. Basically, telling you what your attitude should be towards a number of issues. So, for example, in my hand, I'm holding one, and it says, big, big letters, racism. And then the subheading is, speak out against anti-black racism. So it's not just any racism, it's specifically anti-black racism. You still with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then they go on to define it. Anti-black racism is prejudice, attitudes, beliefs, stereotyping, or discrimination that is directed at people of African descent and is rooted in their unique history and experience of enslavement and colonization.
Okay.
Anti-black racism is deeply embedded in Canadian institutions, policies, and practices to the point that it becomes a part of our systems. So that's just out there as fact. Now, does that sound, everything sounds right to you?
I mean that might be true. I'm not an expert on racism, but that sounds like it rings true. But I mean, one thing to think about, is that distributed by the university or by like a group?
No, it's got Centennial College. You know, they're
interesting. Well,
very, very much. I'm curious about, you know, I understand people, racists, I don't support, I'm saying I understand why people or who they are who have certain attitudes. But this one that's directed at people of African descent and is rooted in their unique history and experience of enslavement and colonization. I don't get that part. Like, I don't think of that. If I'm walking down the street and I see four black guys in hoodies ahead of me, I'll turn a corner or I'll cross the street or whatever, and somebody says, oh, yeah, well, that's, you know, it's common sense or it's racism, whatever. But I'm not thinking about enslavement, colonization. I'm not.
Yeah, but I think the implication is the reason why you may feel that way is
media.
Those opinions come from, yes, but those stereotypes come from those stereotypes can be made because of this history.
I don't get that.
Why?
Well, I just don't understand what you're saying. Why is it? I don't think of enslavement or colonization, and I don't make that. I'm living in suburban Scarborough. I see behavior on the streets, at the bus stops, Kennedy Station in particular, that alarm me. I see people who won't queue. I see people who are really loud on the bus. I see a lot of just generally rude behavior. And generally speaking, and to a large degree, I'll just openly say it's coming from young black people, young black kids. But I don't see the connection to
Yeah, but are you generalizing? Here's the question then. Are you generalizing all black kids based on your experience with some rude folks?
There's
rude white kids and white people in my area and on the bus. Like, there's clearly some meth head kids on my bus ride home every couple days during the week, and I avoid them.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, that you don't think about colonization and enslavement when you have these reactions, but the media stereotypes are made because...
Hello? Aw, oh, Brent has dropped out. Come on back, Brent. You there? You've dropped out. Edit. Hello? Come back. Okay, good. That's a whole whack to edit out.
Yeah, well, and we're going to have to edit again. Apparently my internet conked out or something, because I don't have connection on my home machine. I'm going to have to reboot this whole thing. I'm on my phone.
Do you need to call back?
Yeah, but I'm going to be a second while my router reboots.
I can hear you fine.
Well, yeah, because I'm on data and I'm using my headset mic.
So what would you like me to do?
Well, I just need to wait for my cable modem here to reconnect.
But meanwhile, we can continue our conversation?
We can continue our conversation. Okay. And then when I'm back on, we'll call back again.
Okay. So I flipped the card over and it says in Canada. And then it goes on 206. Number of years that slavery was practiced. Okay, now, see, I wouldn't have thought about that. So maybe that's a good thing. That's a fact, right?
Mm-hmm.
1983 was when the last segregated school was closed. Wow. Hmm.
Yeah, and that's the facts about the segregated schools and stuff.
So this seems more useful.
Yeah.
75.6 cents. How much a black person earns for every dollar earned by a non-racialized person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 13.4%, the unemployment rate of black individuals with a graduate degree, higher than the rate for non-black high school dropouts at 12%. Wow. So that wakes you up to the institutional prejudice, right?
Right.
So this is the good stuff. Three things you can do. Acknowledge how racism has shaped you. Can you do that?
I think so. I think okay. You know, acknowledging that sometimes I have, walking late at night or whatever, and
right.
Encountering, as you said, a group of black youths. I mean, sure, I'll sometimes my head will. My brain will get scared for a second. I'll have to suppress that, and I'll be like, no, that's not... Mm. Calm down, man. I know I have that problem, and I try and deal with it.
You call that a problem, to be afraid of a gang of thugs, white or black? Why is that a problem?
Well, you don't know if they're a gang of thugs.
Well, if they're acting like it.
Right,
I'm thinking when I had our dear friends from... the Uper and his wife getting on a bus at Kennedy Station, and there was a gang of young black kids shouting really loudly at somebody. on the bus and then pounding and pounding on the glass until it was about to break. And it was really, really bad behavior. And but nobody dared say anything or do anything. And I think to them, from this little village they live in, this must have been just, wow, what is this Scarborough place I've come to? Anyway, racism is like an invisible gas that we all breathe. Whether we benefit from it or internalize messages that harm us, racism shapes our thinking and actions. Okay, I like that. Our often unconsciously, even if we don't want it to. Once we acknowledge that, we can begin to explore how we contribute to the problem and what we might do to stop it. All right?
Okay.
Number two, educate yourself. Become aware of the holes in your knowledge. Once you're aware of the holes, like the ones I just read above, it is your, big letters, responsibility to begin filling them in. And number three, speak up and do your part. Too often the job of speaking out against racism is left to people of color. This is unfair. To be effective, all people must be willing to do a good part of the heavy lifting. Okay. This is from the Center for Global Citizenship Education and Inclusion. Comments? No?
Well, hold on. I'm going to... let's finish this segment. My internet's back. I agree with those steps that people can take. I mean, you might not agree with exactly how everything's worded, but in spirit, I would say that you probably agree with all of that stuff, and that if someone's doing something that's racist, you should say, hey, cut that shit out, don't be an asshole. Like,
yeah,
I don't think you have a problem with that. None of us do.
No. So this is good. Overall, this is a good thing for the college to be handing out to students.
I think so. I think so.
So,
all right.
Okay, you're going to call back?
Yeah.
Go ahead. So, listen, I've got a few more cards. What would you like to do? I've got ableist language.
Okay.
Transphobia. Islamophobia, which I was saving to the end. Well, and one I especially like, microaggressions. What would our listeners want? Doesn't matter, does it?
Doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to talk about the term ableist.
Yeah, let's do that, because it's a new one to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh, okay.
The way it's explained here. Language matters. Ableist language. Could you define it then? Why don't you, before I read it, you tell me what you think ableist language is about.
Well, I think ableist is behaving in such a way that your phrases and the way that you carry yourself implies that having a disability in some fashion makes someone less than. I tend to think that accusations of ableism maybe are a little overzealous. I'm disabled myself, and I don't feel bad when people use terminology that sounds like if you're being mean to a disabled person, that's one thing, but if you're just speaking normally and your words and phrases imply that people are ably bodied, then I don't detect malice because someone's just speaking in general. You know, you don't.
Okay.
You don't. You use the term "see" when talking to a blind man. No, that's not you. That's not you being oppressive in any fashion. I think that's just right. You speaking to them like a normal person. And when you're a normal person, sometimes use terminology that is can sound ableist, I guess.
But if I say something like, I feel retarded when I have to put on my plastic legs so I can walk properly, that would be offensive, I suppose.
That would be offensive, I think. Yeah. I mean, but that's
how I feel.
That's you just being insulting to a particular group.
Which group?
Mentally.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we don't say retired, people. Right?
No, we don't. We don't.
So if I said I feel mentally handy or mentally challenged or special when I put on my plastic leg, is that okay?
I guess that's okay. I mean, it's still an off-color joke, but
yeah.
We can still make humor and you know speaking seriously are two different things. Sometimes
yes, you're right.
In humor, you have to use, or it's better to use. Incorrect language because it's funnier that way. I mean, I got disabilities with my legs, and I remember getting I get stuff in the mail from different organizations and stuff, and I remember reading one, and this was back in early 2000s or something, and it was all about all the language in it was saying differently abled as opposed to disabled, and that actually. Really pissed me off because I'm not differently abled. I have trouble walking upstairs.
Well, this is a problem, though, isn't it?
Friend of the show, Dave Broadbeck and I once had a very long conversation about this because his perspective was saying, I'm not differently able. I can't see. Yeah. That's not a different kind of sight.
Yeah.
It's not like I see like a bat. I don't have something. Terms like that, I think maybe take a step too far, but, if you are a marginalized person, hearing language that includes you is helpful, I think. You know, there's a character on a TV show in a wheelchair, then maybe as a kid growing up, you don't feel left out of anything, because there's no kids in wheelchairs, and you're in a wheelchair. Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. I'm not plugged in, so... Hello?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Okay, so... Yeah, I can hear you. I didn't hear you at all for a while there.
I know, and it was... I could see on this... It's all visual, the way this... software is set up, and it was showing a really weak signal coming from the Snowball mic, which doesn't make any sense, but that was it. So I'm going to have to do a hell of a lot of editing and chopping up and so on, but we'll do that anyway. We're good now?
Yeah, we're good. We're talking about ableism and whether or not it's okay to call someone retarded.
I was about to report or tell a very ugly reference on this topic, which a part of me found funny in my old high school humor. So I'm going to share it here just to show what a creep I really am.
Okay.
Somebody referred to, you know, the big washrooms for people with wheelchairs and so on. When you go to any public washroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Accessible washrooms, toilets. I heard somebody refer to it as the tard cage.
Okay.
And I remember laughing. But laughing because I thought, how dare you say something that is just so inappropriate? But at the same time, it was like, I think it was almost laughing back to an old time when you could get away with saying terrible things that in your heart, it wasn't an act of hatred. This wasn't Nazism or anything. But it was ignorance. There was no connection to the words and any individual. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Right. Well, I think there's a couple things there. One, I mean, all teenagers are dicks.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, you know, I...
These were grown men, but anyway.
These were grown men? Okay. Well, then that's...
Anyway.
I don't know. You can have certain senses of humor with friends that maybe isn't... we were talking about personas before. There are some people that I'll make off-color humor with, but I won't say sort of things that I wouldn't say on a podcast.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things I worry about is that, and we've seen this over the past 10 years, people who are afraid to make jokes, not because they don't feel it or think it, but because they don't want it to be perceived. The political correctness, I guess maybe that's what I'm getting at. And I think sometimes that's more dangerous than just plain ignorance or stupidity.
Well, sure, there's been in the past 10 years and maybe longer, but certainly more noticeable in the last decade, that there's been a drive to demonize people when they do a wrong thing. And to, you know, especially with social media and the like, to gang up and destroy someone because they did a wrong thing, when oftentimes it's, you could just call that, you know, I'll say something on Twitter or whatever, that, or on a podcast that maybe is shitty, and someone will say, hey, have you thought about not saying that, because, you know, shares an opinion, and I'll be like, you know what, yeah, I was wrong, my apologies, but...
I don't think that's happens on the show hall.
No, we just destroy each other constantly. That's the point of the show.
All right, well, back to ableism then. Ableism is a form of discrimination against people with physical, mental, or developmental disabilities. So it covers the whole range, right?
Right.
It is perpetuated by the belief that they need to be fixed or cannot function as full members of society. Okay, that's very clear, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Ableism can take many forms. Everyday language is one of the most common ways that negative views about people with disabilities are reinforced. And again, the title is Language Matters, Ableist Language. So we're talking about language more than behavior.
Right.
And then they give a list of things. That's so pointless, irritating, annoying, goofy, ditzy, senseless, ridiculous, absurd, silly, ludicrous, dull, asinine, foolish, flightly, and you choose retarded? Ah, that's nicely phrased, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. End the R word. Oh, well, there you go, right? End the R word. Say this: unreal, unbelievable, awful, bad, ridiculous, boring, careless, oblivious, not that, insane, crazy, stupid, dumb. I don't know why you can't say stupid. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying some of this stuff, you know, gets too far, like insane, calling something crazy. Yeah,
yeah, crazy. But not that. Retarded, lame. Oh, lame. Now, how do you feel about that one?
See, that doesn't bother me. No one is called, if your legs don't work, no one calls you lame. It's
See, this is the problem with this, isn't it? Like somebody on a committee has said we have to include that word.
Right. Well, because you look at, like, where does this word come from? Whether or not that's its colloquial usage now.
Yeah. You can't.
Like, I don't think about literally, mentally. Some mental disorder when I say the word crazy or insane.
No.
Or stupid, yeah.
It shouldn't even be on that list at all.
It's stupid that it's there.
Yeah. The other two are blind and deaf. Are you deaf? You know, I guess in that sense.
Yeah, but what if you were saying someone was deaf to something? Because in my mind, that's a correct usage of it, because you're not targeting a person, you are using deaf as a way to, you know,
right,
describe the behavior.
I might be accused of being blind to black racism. Right?
Exactly. I have a number of friends with sight disabilities, and we joke all the time about that stuff. You know?
The anti-black racism, I guess, we're going to have to give these you know, what's the college rating system? A, B, C, D, fail. I guess that gets maybe a B for the first one we did.
Well, B based on what? The material?
The message they're giving out, and the material and their explanation and so on.
Sure, but you're grading that based on your own opinion. Like,
I'm just saying from our discussion. But
from our discussion?
Is I think that information card is better than this ableist language one in terms of...
Yeah, this ableist language one, I'd say that's C. I'd say maybe a C, maybe lower, because I don't necessarily agree with the premise of the flyer in the first place.
Okay, good.
You can call me lame all you want. You could say something is hobbled. Yeah. I don't have a lot of...
We could nickname you Hobbles, maybe?
You could nickname me Hobbles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be too offended.
Yeah. See, I'm almost in on this now that I have to wear a leg brace. I feel I can get away with a little more now. Now that I am a little bit slightly disabled myself.
You know? Yeah, you can. Yeah, you're part of the.
I can use the retarded word again. Do I get a pass for that, or that's
no, not yet.
Okay. All right. So let's do transphobia.
Okay.
What do you know, transphobia? Yeah, do you, what, maybe better if you sort of giving your explanation before I read what they have.
Sure. I mean, that is being discriminatory and cruel, I guess, to people that identify as transgender, and I don't know many people that are transgender in my life, but I would say in the last couple of years, I've probably tried to understand what that concept is in general.
Isn't Hungry D transgender?
No.
Oh. Okay, sorry.
I think you may have just made a transphobic joke.
Yes. That's what we're trying to do here. But. Okay. Let's see what they have to say about it. It's an irrational dislike, fear, or hatred of transgender people or people who are perceived as not meeting society's expectations around gender roles, appearance, or behavior. Irrational dislike, fear, or hatred. Okay. Transphobia is expressed through beliefs and actions that are discriminatory, demeaning, or violent towards trans people.
Yeah.
What is gender identity is the next question that comes up. Gender identity is a person's internal and individual experience of their gender, such as an internal sense of being a woman, man, both, neither, or another gender entirely. I don't know what that would be. Everyone has a gender identity and expresses their gender identity in different ways.
Okay, so, I mean, I agree with all that.
Hard to argue, eh?
It's hard to argue. I mean, I think a lot of this, you know, I've since learned a lot about this sort of transphobia thing because it's been in the news and what have you. There's been more to read about that. And I'm pro-trans. I don't think I've done anything that is intentionally transphobic, and I don't have a problem with it. I mean, we're both socially liberal people, and a lot of times the ethos comes down to, well, are you going to let people just live and let live, just be who they're going to be if they're not hurting you or anyone else? And the answer is yes. So I'm not, gender roles are stupid in the first place. I don't ascribe to traditional gender roles of masculinity, and neither do you.
No, in fact, I try and teach my students, and I haven't found a really good way, but I try to, like, I draw a line and sort of say, this is the human race, and it may appear you've got sort of men on one side, but nobody's 100%. It's not a black or white on or off switch. It's just this long line of possibilities, and you could appear anywhere on that line, you know, and I do go on to say some men are less masculine than others. I did talk about it. I made them read a story about some poor kid who was really abused at school because he wanted to be a nice skater, like a nice dancer, instead of playing hockey. And the kids were ruthless, just brutal to him. And he ended up committing suicide. And I wanted them to know that story and say, this is not right. We don't do that. Because a lot of people come from cultures that haven't yet caught up with where we are. But anyway.
If we're talking about other cultures, and I only have the most cursory understanding of this, but there are I think in Japanese culture, no, or is it some Asian culture, and I think in some Native American cultures, there is the concept of a gender that is neither male nor female, and they tend to mean different things. But our society is initially framed as Western European Judeo-Christian, and so there are concepts that are new to us, and we shouldn't be disrespectful to people that don't match up with it if it doesn't hurt anyone.
But the reality is, I mean, it just came out, the government apologizing and give money for all the civil servants who were fired when it was found out they were homosexual or something like that. I mean, we have a history of discrimination.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and there was the apology for the residential school, speaking of recent apologies.
We don't have that card. We're not doing
that. We don't have that card. I'm just saying that in the recent past, we have, I think, made a... Canadians have made a better effort to try and acknowledge that we're not, you know, there's a lot of talk. We're like, oh, we're, you know, there's all this Black Lives Matter stuff in the States, but we're better than that. And no, we're not. We're, I think this came up on a show hold we did at MMPR where John Meadows spoke about Canadian exceptionalism. Or is that on a Gappage podcast?
I don't know. I'd like to get on with the backside of this card, but if
you're sorry.
Going on that, that's fine. Oh, wait.
I'm sorry. It was just John Meadows had a... We should not... Oh, it's the anger core at MMPR, and we should not, as Canadians, let ourselves fall prey to the sort of Canadian exceptionalism concept that we're better just because we're Canadians.
Basically, I sum it up with, let us not be too smug. Smug, S-M-U-G.
Okay. Exactly.
So on the back of this card, four ways to be an effective trans ally. And then it shows she, he, his, hers. These are not the only pronouns. And this is an interesting case because this is being tried in court. There are also gender neutral pronouns. They, them, their. And then they do Z-E, which I guess is Z. S-I-E.
Mm-hmm.
Z-I-E, H-I-R. I saw Lauren come to work today, and they, Z, seemed really happy. I wonder if it has anything to do with their weekend. Now, I'm not comfortable with the Z, Z-E, Z-I-E, S-I-E, H-I-R. I'm not there yet. I don't acknowledge it. That's not English.
I don't acknowledge it, but I have not encountered it in my real life. And if someone were to tell me their preferred pronouns, then I would endeavor to use them, though I'd have slip ups.
So there's you know a what, university professor in a great deal of trouble,
right?
Refusing to apply these terms.
Oh, this is the Jordan Peterson guy.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, he got in trouble. Did he teach at York or something?
U of T?
Yeah, that sounds right. And he intentionally didn't. Some students, you know, said, I want to be they or Z or whatever. And he would go out of his way not to use those pronouns.
Did he go out of his way not to, or he just refused to?
I think the way he described it was... He just said, I'm not going to do that. I don't...
I'm on his side 100%. You don't have to.
Why?
Well, why should he have to? Why should somebody come in and say, hey, I got a new word here and I want you to use it. You have to use it. Or I'll sue you. I'll take you to the college and they'll make you use it.
It depends.
I'll tell you what I'll call you whatever I want.
No. Okay. So you can do whatever you want. But if you're doing... If someone tells you, hey, don't call me that... Call me something else, and you show a repeated pattern of not even attempting to get it right, then that's just you being an asshole, and you're well within your rights to do that, and people are well within their rights to call you out. So whether or not...
Are they well within the rights to fire him?
It depends on your contract. That's a separate matter altogether.
No, let's not just say it depends on your contract. I mean, it depends on how strong his union is, or you know, what's the morally correct thing? You refuse to acknowledge these new terms, and therefore you're no longer fit to be a professor at our university?
It depends on the university. That's just how that goes. Like, if they had a strongly worded, you know, he had tenure or whatever and couldn't be fired for that, then he's fine.
Decision. That's just a practical decision.
Yeah, that's a policy decision. The moral opinion on that is, yeah, you're an asshole, whether or not that means you're allowed, in my opinion, whether or not you're allowed to keep your job is something else.
So I think we have a gappage here, finally.
Okay.
Because I'm just saying.
Well, I mean,
I love the word MS. I use it all the time. Ms. as opposed to Miss or Mrs. Because that's clearly discriminatory. Mr.
Right.
I don't know whether they're married, not married. Miss and Mrs. identify the person. Ms. in the middle can be used to either. And I'm 100%, and I've been that way for since that first came out, you know, 40 years ago. But this, I'm not here yet with Z.
Right, but I think it has to do with opportunities to use it and being forced to. So I've noticed a lot lately on...
Anyway, it's not even the person's name. It's just a fucking pronoun.
Right, but I've seen that on social media a lot with younger people or on... I'm on Tinder a bunch, and there are people that will list out their pronouns, and you, my reaction is, huh, that's weird. But on the other hand, that's just this is what us liberals wanted. We wanted society to move forward and be more open. And as time goes on, there's going to be concepts that are foreign to us, and we should endeavor to understand them and not just dismiss them.
Thank you. Let's see what else they've got to say about this thing. Use the right pronoun. If you're unsure of someone's pronoun, be attentive to how others refer to this person. If you're concerned that people might be using the incorrect pronoun, politely and privately ask what pronoun is preferred. Well, seems very polite. Listen. Experiences of transphobia can often be dismissed. Listen to and affirm the experiences of trans people. All right? Apologize. Everyone makes mistakes. Acknowledge the wrong. Apologize and move on. It isn't always about your intent, but about the impact. And do your homework. Educate yourself on the issues facing trans communities. And remember to make ally a verb. Make ally a verb. Oh, to act on it. Being an ally is about making change with and for the trans community. So I'm clearly... in the wrong on just this issue of the pronouns. Everything else, I just want to accept people for the wonderful, individual, unique creatures we all are.
Okay, so it's not as pointless as slang, but you understand that as time goes forward, we have new words for things, that we have new slang, right? And it takes a while to get used to its usage, and there's some words where you're like, yeah, I'm just not going to say that. But as time goes on, you get... used to the new words. I think the same thing will happen for you with the pronouns.
I may come around. Now, we got two left.
Okay.
Shall we continue on this thing? I think this is...
Sure. I like this card format. This is a good idea.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we run out after the show, but... anyway,
we can make more cards.
Islamophobia and microaggressions. Let's save the microaggressions for the end.
I was going to say, let's save the Islamophobia. I thought we've talked about that already.
Well...
on the show.
But we're going to do it.
Okay. All right. You're the man with the cards. You get to choose.
Well, it's because to me, my favorite, I think, is going to be the microaggressions.
Oh, okay.
I always save the best. I have like six little pill cases, so I remember to take my pills every morning. And I always choose the ugly colors first and save the beautiful red and pink for the end. And it's the same like eating, saving your dessert or that last tasty bit of ice cream that's still got some caramel in it or something. Save that for the end. Savor it. I everything I do in life is like that.
Okay.
So I would naturally, I think microaggression is more interesting because I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
Would want to save it. Do you understand my reasoning?
I understand your reasoning. Carry on then.
Save or not, or you just reach for the favorite thing and just stuff it in your mouth.
I have been trying to savor things more. As opposed to going for instant gratification, so...
Okay. All right. So, speak out against Islamophobia. Islamophobia is a form of racism that is an irrational fear of Islam and a hatred or dislike of Muslims or those perceived to be Muslim. You got to feel sorry for the people who wear a turban as a Sikh and are seen as Muslims. Fear has led to some... to discriminate against, demonize, and dehumanize Muslims. Political conflict, globalization, and social media have led to negative attitudes, violence, harassment, discrimination, and stereotyping of Muslims. Well, there's nothing to argue there, is there?
Yeah.
Well, flip to the back. Misconceptions of Islam. Here we go. The hijab or headscarf is oppressive. I agree. I like headscarves. I think they're beautiful and so on.
Okay, well, here's I no longer feel this way, but I would say a good 4 years ago I thought that until I read more about it.
Well, again, we're not talking about the full burqa. We're just talking about a headscarf.
Yeah, no, I felt that way and then changed my mind. Okay. So
when my mother went to the Anglican Church back in the 1960s, there were scarves at the front of the church or the back of the church where you, if you weren't wearing a hat, you had to put a scarf over your hair before you walked into the church. So this would be nothing new to me.
Okay. Yeah.
Islam is connected to hatred and terrorism. Now, how could you say it's not? Islam is connected to hatred and terrorism. How could anybody say that's not true? Your pause is in.
You could say that about any religion. I was having an issue where it's like, should I say this out loud? You have that issue with every religion.
I do? Or
no, I mean every religion has that problem.
Well, I know. I don't see Christianity being connected to terrorism.
I do. No, not anymore. That's not true. What about the behavior of the racist protesters, the white supremacy protesters in Charlottesville? Almost all of those groups are Christians.
Well, yeah, but you think you identify them as, okay, maybe this is my answer, you identify them as neo-Nazis.
Right, because you have a more you have a more in-depth understanding of the different kinds of white Christians out there, but when you only have a certain a small understanding of Muslims, and you just the only time you hear about Muslims is in connection with terrorism, then you're bound to think that way.
It's a misconception. This isn't saying all Muslims are terrorists.
I'm not saying that's what I'm saying.
Islam is connected to hatred and terrorism.
So is Christianity. So is Buddhism.
Okay.
There's Buddhist terrorism in other parts of the world. So the fact that you don't hear about it all the time doesn't mean that it isn't true. You have all these survivalist redneck groups in the States that often are connected with white supremacy. They all are Christians. You have extremist right-wing Christians that, you know, try and that fund settlements in Israel because they think that's what their religion asks for them to do.
Okay. I'll stand down. I'll say I'm misinformed, and I'll stand corrected.
Okay, that feels good.
Islam is seen as not sharing common values with other major faiths.
Okay,
that's misconceptions, right?
Sorry, say that again. That it's not
Islam is seen as not sharing common values with other major faiths, and you're saying misconception.
I think that's a misconception too. You read the Bible closely, and there's some crazy shit in there, and you can grab the Quran and do the same thing. I mean, people identify as Christian just fine while saying, well, I don't think all this crazy stuff. I'm fine with gay people, and I'm fine with wearing different fabrics, and I'm fine with eating shellfish, even though the Bible says all those things are wrong. In the same way, you can have Muslim people that say, yeah, I'm a member of this faith, but there's some crazy old shit in there that no one listens to anymore. And there are some extremists that do.
You know that I'm reading Ayaan Hirsi Ali now, so this has stirred me up a little bit.
Okay.
The business about the hijab and headscarf. Women who have chosen to wear the hijab do so as a sign of faith, like wearing the cross or the yarmulke?
Yarmulke.
Yarmulke, right. That's a Jewish little hat, right?
Yeah.
There was a nickname for that, too. Skullcap? I don't know. All right. Islam is connected to terrorism. Islam has been widely misportrayed by the media. Well, that's for sure. The religion of Islam is centered on faith, hope, and peace.
Sure.
You're saying sure. See, I'm...
I don't know. I'm not Muslim.
I'm owning up to my ignorance here because I still... I don't think any religion that doesn't allow you to leave the religion cannot call itself a religion of peace.
Yeah, but there are parts in the Bible that say if you're an atheist, you should be put to death. There are, parts of it that say,
nobody's acting on that today.
Nobody's acting on that right now in Canada, but there are crazy people all over the place that act on that.
I think you'd be very hard-pressed to find out where in one part of the world where Christians are being put to death.
You understand that Islam and is a little newer than Christianity, and different things take... Christianity is only everywhere because the Roman Emperor converted to Catholicism, and it sort of...
Well, this is...
Or Christianity...
This is all I want, is an acknowledgement that Islam is behind the times and it must adapt and change to the modern world.
The
traditional part of the religion is not helping people in the countries. These countries are backwards, and a lot of the backwardness is tied into adhering to this faith in a very traditional manner.
Right, but that's true of all religions. The backwards thinking in the south or out west here, or in some parts of rural Ontario, where people don't like black people and hate on gay people and don't even remotely understand transgender people. All of that stuff comes from being more religious than city people. That. You read that stuff, you're like, well, if that's what the rule book says, that must be what's true. And that's not what's true. Everything's a little bit more gray than that. And taking extremist positions supported by your religious texts is almost never a good idea.
Well, thank you for speaking up on that. Three things you can do. Listen to the stories that Muslims tell about themselves. Muslim communities are very diverse. Educate yourself. Consider what biases you have. Clearly, I have biases. What myths you believe about Muslims, clearly I believe things that should not be broadly thought of to apply to all Muslims, very clearly, and begin the difficult process of unlearning those myths. Have difficult conversations, challenge myths, and confront everyday instances of Islamophobia and ignorance surrounding Muslims. So you see, the other day when I started reading this book, by Ayan Hirsi Ali, I wanted to make a big placard saying there is no God and march up and down, back and forth this very large mosque here on Lawrence Avenue in Scarborough. And I knew that would not be a smart thing to do and not even a good thing to do. But that was a feeling that rose up in me quite strongly. There is
no okay, God. So here's I think where you might be able to develop some understanding. You feel that way because you, at times, had a extremist atheist philosophy, as do I, because we've had conversations and spoken to people that share our values. And what you can say with that group of people is different than what you would say in public, because you're maybe not always being completely true to yourself and being putting on a bit of a performance for those people that you're hanging out with. So similarly, there are groups of people that have extremist views that they get from their culture or their group, which is closely tied to a religion, be it Christianity or Judaism or Islam. And every group has extremist opinions that we share, and sometimes we leak out. And if people's whole conception of who we were as people, other people's conception of who we were as people, was based on some of the shit we say when we're talking about atheism with a bunch of our atheist friends, they would think we were a real asshole. I used to share all kinds of stuff on Facebook and social media, you know, following atheism blogs and a lot of that content. It's like, here, look at this crazy shit that's going down with this extremist Christian or Muslim or something like that. And, you know, the comment section of that blog is a bunch of people making fun of that thing. And I stopped sharing that stuff on Facebook because, A, it attracts the wrong people. It enraged me and wasn't really helpful.
Right.
And most religious people aren't like that. And I was realizing that, hey, I've probably come off as a real asshole just sharing this stuff. This isn't necessarily what I think. And if I want to share this stuff, then I'll talk about it with a group of people that's I see eye to eye with, and we can say that stuff to each other without coming off looking like an asshole, because we're with a group that's receptive to those sorts of ideals.
Very sensible of you, Brent.
Thank you.
When my mother was dying, or knew she'd be dying, she didn't think too hard about it, I don't think, but she wanted to believe anyway, that she'd be joining my father in heaven, she'd be seeing him again. And I was happy she believed that. Like, oh, that's nice. Knowing she wasn't going to. But happy to let her have that belief. But when I hear about somebody else who really believes through an act of suicide bombing that he is going to go up to this wonderful heaven and be blessed and find the true hereafter and peace and all the virgins and so on. It just infuriates me, and I have no tolerance for it. And I guess I forgave my mother and allowed my mother that little bit of misunderstanding. I don't think I'd tolerate it too much with anybody else. Like, no, come on now. Think for a minute. You cannot believe in heaven. You're not allowed to.
Yeah, I mean, we're more forgiving of our family than we are from anyone else.
Okay, I'm going to we'll move on.
Have you seen the movie The Invention of Lying?
No.
It's a weird fantasy romantic comedy with Ricky Gervais. It's good cuz he's one of those atheist voices that will say things intentionally to infuriate religious people. It's a laugh listening to him talk sometimes. But
I've seen it, I guess, on TV. I've seen parts of it, or I've seen it on YouTube, clips from it. It's great.
Yeah. Well, that movie it's a world where no one lies, ever.
Yes.
And the main character's mom is dying in the hospital, and he says, you know, don't just relax and calm down. You're going to go to a place where it's better, and there's no pain. You're going to see all our old family members. And he basically just makes up a heaven. And because it's a world where no one lies, everyone else that's, you know, in the hospital listening to this believes it's true. And he sort of just goes on with it's the repercussions of sort of accidentally inventing heaven. And he does it to comfort his dying mother. And it's a really good movie, especially because, you know, you see the sort of stuff that, Ricky Gervais says on Twitter and on talk shows and stuff. And, it's a softer Ricky Gervais, I think, which is interesting because it's a movie I think he helped make.
Okay. All right. I'm going to stop this now, and I'm going to come back to the last section, but, I'm going to, explain a couple of things to you. So,
okay,
we're going to stop here. How would you describe in words the sound of your horn?